Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward.
Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is Amy Muscoplatt, who is a writing teacher, creative facilitator, and owner of Joy Festival Industries. Amy works in multiple ways to create materials that help people raise their joy quotient via wellness programming, crafting, DIY gatherings, and celebrations. This includes creating kits, tutorials, and consulting with individuals and groups who wish to do programming and interactive events that involve narrative journaling, crafting, creative writing, and/or connecting and creating with others. She's a dynamic public presenter and speaker on a variety of subjects, including mindful journaling for health and happiness, finding your joy, various crafting and paper arts crafts, vision boarding, creating happiness rooms, and more. Her background as a workshop presenter, crafter, children's librarian, storyteller, programming and event planner, informal educator for classrooms, and public services librarian. She leads workshops around Southern California for both adults and families in both public and nonprofit settings and teaches mindful journaling for health programs for individuals living with chronic and persistent pain. She conducts crafting and writing programs tailored for older adults in both Southern California and the Twin Cities metro area, both in person and virtually. Ms. Muscoplatt, when at home, can be found writing, handmade card making, creating wherever she is. She's working on a book entitled Choosing Joy When It Is Not Your Default and can be found via her website at joyfestivalindustries.com. Amy, welcome to SpondyCast. I'm very excited for this.
And thank you, Jill.
I'm very excited that we're going to do this. And you're so in alignment with many of the things we talk about. And I'm for our listeners who are following, you should follow Joy Festival Industries on Instagram because that's where we met. But you've been a long time connection to the SAA. And I think this is a great topic. Can you explain a little to the listeners what mindful journaling or expressive writing is and what this looks like?
Yeah, so mindful journaling or expressive writing, another name for it is narrative or guided journaling. And oftentimes it's led by prompts or by leaders who sort of guide you on a path that it's not just a prompt, but there's also a reflective writing piece afterwards, a short reflection. So numerous studies and experts talk about sort of in the fields of psychology, mindfulness, stress reduction techniques, all these experts talk about how writing can actually help us to offload what's on our minds, but have physiological benefits. So I know there's some well-known studies with journaling by, I believe, Dr. James Pennebaker at UT Austin and Dr. James Evans, John Evans, rather, in North Carolina. And they did studies with people to show outcomes, you know, after journaling with different illnesses and things going on in their lives. So part of the why behind that is our bodies have a loading capacity. So my librarian background will tell you that, you know, any flooring in a library can only take so much tonnage of books. You can only put so many things on shelves on certain weights of floors before it collapses. And our bodies, especially people who have chronic pain, such as any form of spondyloarthritis or another rheumatological or other pain issue of any sort, there's that weight on your body. And then there's usually the stress around the pain and other things. And so in order to offload some of that and find a little bit more calm or equanimity, or even just a little bit less of that extra layer that's going to sit on the floor and the weight of your body, one thing is to write and to journal. So there is the ability to just do a brain dump and like a diary journal. And that's fine. It just sometimes is often, not always, but is often lacking a reflective piece that helps you to take that and then go a little further.
It's so fascinating. And this is in alignment with again, a lot of what we talk about, and I think it's one of the things in my, we'll call it my favorite book of 2023, The Chronic Pain Reset. But journaling is part of this. So what are some of the benefits of the practice? Like generally, but is there specific link to chronic pain or chronic illness?
Yeah. So we generally have things we've told ourselves about our pain. You know, I mean, it's a lot of work to take care of and be mindful and attend to all the parts of one's health with pain.
Yep.
And a lot of the things we do out in the world don't help us to come back to ourselves. So to come back to our bodies and what our mind is doing with it, not just the exercise part, which is also very helpful, or the, you know, stretching part, which is also very helpful, but to get in touch with what our mind and our subconscious is doing, and to quickly try and write that down. And sometimes if there's a prompt, to bypass that logic mind and get that onto the page and then be able to look at it a little bit. You are basically doing a helpful tool for yourself. So like you are the practitioner for yourself. You don't actually necessarily need a mindful journaling practitioner all the time. You can learn a few skills on your own, or you can buy some books that help you. And then you can use this to help yourself to offload some stress, to shed some things, to make some good connections for yourself in your mind and in your body, and how that is going to work for you with both your sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system, to ratchet that level of extra hyper vigilance that happens oftentimes with pain conditions, to ratchet it down a little bit. That then helps you to move on a little bit more calmly. I have noticed, and just to sort of answer this in another way, I've noticed that with many of my participants over the years, some of the best journaling for them happens before they go to any of their practitioners and then afterwards. Not necessarily this awful thing happened or this good thing happened, but also to kind of make some of those connections for them. What sits right for them? What feels right for them?
Yeah. And sometimes it doesn't work itself out in our heads as much as it does on a piece of paper.
Right.
You've been doing this for quite some time. How did you get started, and why, and what does this mean for you personally?
So I was a journaler back to high school, and I journaled about mostly more like a diary. Like I would dump what was going on in my life, and it was a way for me to deal with my own stress and tension and being a driven and perfectionistic teen. And then in college and afterwards, when I'd travel around the world and go places on trips, you know, in the States even, I would journal about it. I was much more regular about my journaling, but I wasn't necessarily making connections between what it was. And I didn't have as many good prompts. I just would kind of write what was sitting on my heart. And for me, that was very helpful. I also felt that something that was important to me, I still find useful for people, which was journaling by hand. I do keep a journal still. I keep paper journals, and I always have a journal sort of with me somewhere, even if it's, you know, multiple ones. They're not necessarily always, you know, consistent with which one I'm using. And I do keep one online because sometimes, you know, my wrist hurts or I can't do that. So it means a lot to me. And then I got started teaching this more formally because, like you mentioned in the introduction, I am a librarian by training. And somewhere along the way, while I was a children's librarian, I got a second master's in creative writing, which was sort of dovetailed with what I was doing. And I was teaching writing classes. And then people asked me what I did for my own writing. And at the time, I wasn't writing a book. I was working on my thesis for my graduate program, and I was journaling up the wazoo. And I just thought, well, I'm doing this. And people started asking me, well, how do I spark that creative writer inside of me? And I said, well, do you journal? Can you start with, you know, that? Could you do even morning pages? And then I was getting more into my own pain journey, for lack of a better term. And I was finding books and resources and organizations that spoke to this for me. And I started taking classes and using it. And then there were two physicians, actually, one was from the East-West Medicine Center at UCLA, and one was a rheumatologist here in Southern California. And both of them knew I was doing this, from one, because they had been referred to me to learn some of these skills for their patients. And one just knew I did it. And they started encouraging me, maybe teach a class on this for people. I would refer people, you know, confidentially to you. And then it just sort of morphed. And this was before the pandemic. And people were starting to refer people through the gastroenterology and integrative gastro department and rheumatology and pain management specialists. And then a lot of people didn't feel comfortable necessarily doing it in a group. We met in a, I had a therapist who loaned me her office on the west side of Los Angeles. And we'd meet once a month on like a Sunday afternoon. And I purposely chose afternoons because people with pain conditions, first thing in the morning stinks. And it's really, you know, they're usually very stiff. Evenings, sometimes we're already cycling down with pain. And I didn't want to make it too long or too hard. And I found a place with comfortable seats. And we were doing it in person. And then the pandemic started. And I started doing it on Zoom. But I found that, again, people with pain management issues, sitting still for a long time on any sort of video conferencing software is hard. So I don't need to see you if you're writing, but I do need to hear you. So I moved it to freeconferencecall.com. And at the same time, other people started asking me to do this individually, one-on-one. So I was sort of doing individual conferences, and we kept on Free Conference Call for a while. And then I started, some of those people moved on, and they referred other people. And now I also train various clinicians, I guess is the best term for that.
That's fascinating. And so for people, a lot of people, myself included, I've journaled at times. There's a vulnerable spot there, I think, in a lot of journaling. But for people who haven't really ever done it, like, how do you ease into it? Like, how do you teach people to get going?
Well, for starters, there's no rules.
Love it.
There's no rules. There's no rules. And you don't have to write every day, and you don't have to write a lot. But what I would start with is a simple prompt, like, what's calling to you to write today? What's sitting on your chest today? What do you need to write about today? And there's other prompts as well, but I would start with something like that. And then, in formal classes or when I'm with somebody individually, I often start with a metta meditation, which is like a loving kindness meditation, to get people to sort of come in from their day or wherever they were before they were with me, even if that's on the telephone, just to kind of calm themselves down. And there's a level, as you mentioned, Jill, with vulnerability. But I think the hardest thing for many people with any sort of persistent pain condition is self-compassion. Kristen Neff out of also Texas is one of the foremost experts on the studies around learning and teaching and practicing self-compassion. But we often have that for other people, and it's very hard to have it for ourselves. And then if you hurt, you're usually a little cranky towards yourself and sometimes towards people around you, unfortunately. Both are unfortunate. It's not good to be cranky towards yourself either. I didn't mean to infer that. But I think to do something that brings you in. So if you're not a person who meditates, or you're not a person who feels good doing loving kindness meditation, just a simple phrase like, may I be calm with what's going on with my body. May my body have some moments of peace in the midst of everything going on. Something very simple, something not highfalutin and you know, Pollyanna, because this is not necessarily going to, quote unquote, get better. There, even writing and journaling is not a panacea, but it is a tool that can help you. And then once they've calmed themselves down a few moments, to start with something simple, like what's calling to you to write today? What do I need to write about? And do that for, you know, time yourself. Say, I'm going to do this for 3 minutes, and that's very small. And for that 3 minutes, I'm not going to let my pen or my pencil leave the page. And there's no crossouts. But that means there's no worry about editing. And if I get stuck or I get stumped, I literally just keep writing the same word over and over and over again until the next thing pops into my brain. And what you're trying to do is sort of bypass that critical front of your brain editor and get the dump onto your brain from your onto your page from your subconscious. After you've written for a while, and I could give you some other ideas, you could go on to something else. But at the end, what I'd like the person to be able to do is look over and read over what they wrote, not with a critical judging eye, but more like a journalistic observer. I want them to read it over and note anything that stands out for them. Again, not the content, not the quality of the writing, but on the journalistic, you know, overhead observer, like an eagle's eye, what stands out? And then I want them to write two to three lines maximum. When I read over what I wrote, I notice blank. Or when I read over what I wrote, I feel blank. Or when I read over what I wrote, I'm aware of blank. Or when I read over what I wrote, I feel, I think, I know that the next step needs to be. It's like a journalistic eagle eye observation about what your words said to you. And then you can write those 2 to 3 sentences, and then you could go on to another prompt. And in that way, you're kind of bringing yourself back to what you just let out of yourself. One other thing for the vulnerability I will say is for people who are concerned, and this is a fair concern, and not just in today's day and age, but people live with other people in their homes oftentimes. So if you're concerned that somebody might find your journal or read your journal or give you grief about your journal, so to speak, you could find a safe place to keep it or hide it. You can also get a key if you have an old-fashioned journal with a key, a diary with a key, or you can do a password-protected file on your computer. There are many studies that talk about how writing with your hand, there's a kinesthetic connection to your subconscious. But, you know, we don't need to be, you know, to quote Voltaire, don't make the perfect the enemy of the good. It doesn't matter. If it's better for you to write online, I'm all for it. Just do what works for you with this.
Yeah. And I think also in that vein, for some people generationally, I see it that I'm a pen to paper girl. And I know people who wouldn't dare write on a piece of paper. They only want to type.
Right. Right. And if that works for them, that's great.
Right. So it's very personal. So in looking at your website ahead of time, one thing that caught my eye was you said that the practice, and I quote, helped me attend to myself in a positive, calming, mindful, and healing way. And I love that attend to myself phrase because it has an intention to prioritize what you need, show up for yourself, carve time out. I think that for some of our listeners, taking that step to regularly focus with such intention is something many have probably not done in days or weeks or years. And it seems like a switch. How do you create that intention with yourself and make sure that you're attending to that?
That's a great question. So, Jill, I don't think I set out initially to attend to myself with this process. And what I noticed over time was that it was attending to myself. While I was starting to teach this more, And especially with individuals one-on-one, I noticed that I had to practice what I was preaching much more. And I think that also it reminded me that you could be a very good patient. You know, you could go to your rheumatologist and your pain management specialist and get your, you know, acupuncture, or your trigger point injections, do your physical therapy on land and do your warm water PT in the warm water pool. And, you know, you could take your supplements and you could do your exercises and your stretching and your Pellicore and your Feldenkrais and all these things that I've done, including others. And everyone, yeah. And everyone else has probably, who listens, has done some or more or different, or, you know, tried cold plunging or saunas or just, you know, I mean, as I'm sitting here, I'm talking to you and I literally have a heating pad on my lap with a jacket over it and a hot water bottle tied to my waist. I, you know, take medication and I go and I'm a good patient. But being a good patient doesn't actually mean that you listen to your heart and what is going on in your subconscious. It just means that you're doing what you're quote unquote supposed to do. And I am not advocating that you don't do those things. But I think that doing those things, you can lose sense of who you are. You could be running from pillar to post to all these dippy appointments. Again, they're not bad appointments. I don't mean to say any of the professionals are dips or anything terrible. But
no, I know what you mean,
it's
though.
It's a lot of work. And somehow I notice that if I don't really attend to me and what's going on in my soul, so to speak, and what I need to breathe through and write through, I was getting a little lost in the process of all the appointments and all, you know, and this one thinks you should do that and this one thinks whatever. And I'm like, ah,
it's whiplash. And
it's a lot of whiplash, but it's also a lot of work. And I remember once going to my, it's a different physician, my allergy immunologist, different, you know, clinician that one has to see sometimes. And I literally did this like motion with my hand, sort of motioning my whole body. I'm like, you know, this is all a lot of work. And I was kind of like referring to like everything from my toes, which, you know, the orthotics and the, you know, to my head with the headaches from the medication. And I was like, it's a lot of work. And the more I journal, and the more I even start journaling with maybe a phrase to myself, like, you know, may I have acceptance with what's going on, even while I work to heal and move forward the best I can. The more I can be kinder to myself and journal and or do guided visualization and then journal, the more I walk through my day a little bit less drained by the work that goes into this. And I have a little less, I noticed sort of the more I was doing it, it was very infinitesimal changes in the beginning. But as time went on, I was a little less cranky with myself. And then I was a little less cranky than that. And I missed the days when I didn't journal. I like missed it. Like I craved it. I was like, yeah. Wait a minute, I need to offload this. It's too much is going on. And, you know, it's a lot of work with pain conditions. And then, you know, the weight of the world and everything going on for everyone for the last however many years. And as we age, we have other concerns with aging and people we love, or we're in a sandwich generation, or we're a teenager dealing with, you know, pressures of that, or, you know, anything with anybody that we love. To be a human has things that sit on you in a good and bad way. So I just miss it when I don't do it. And that taught me that that time was a tool in my toolkit to help me just as much as going to my other clinicians. And it was my tool for me, for myself, from myself.
Yeah. And it's interesting, because as you describe this, one of our former guests calls this pick what fills your cup, and what fills your cup is self-care. Or I think of it, I'm more the like Avenger here, but like I always think of it as sometimes non-compliance or I'll call it non-compliance, right? Like, I'm going to my doctor's offices, I'm doing all the things, this takes up all my time, I don't feel human, both and when you find something where you're almost, I call it like non-compliant. Like at first people are probably like, you're journaling all the time. How is that going to help a chronic illness? And like you, I think many people have found there are certain things that everyone else doesn't, it's not this person's advice or this person's advice. And you almost have to go, you know what, you know what, I'm going to do what I think is right for me and what feels good and where I find myself falling in this like light space in my life. And yeah, it is tough. I think a lot of people can relate to where you are at. You talk a little bit on your blog and you've alluded to it here that you also have a rheumatological condition. Do you mind sharing a little bit with our listeners? Because I think it will help a lot.
Yeah, so I do actually have a form of spondyloarthritis. And I, like many people, spent many years along the journey of trying to figure out what that was. And, you know, that's a lot of bumbling along from different clinicians and different, you know, things. And there is a family history of ankylosing spondylitis in my family. And nevertheless, if you don't have X symptom or Y symptom when you're younger, sometimes you sort of fall through the cracks and don't get diagnosed until later. And this actually also speaks to your last point as well, which is, I think in the first number of years when I was younger that I was kind of, again, bumbling from along, trying to figure out where and who and what I needed to do to deal with all of the pain and what was going on, I started realizing that lots of people will tell you what they think is in their wheelhouse of what's right for you. And again, I am not saying don't follow clinicians' advice. Right. If they give you, you know, if it's good advice for you and it's, you know, medically necessary, whatever, do what works and what they, you know, what you think is best for you and what, you know, fits in your treatment plan. But I tried, just for one example, I tried many kinds of exercise. This is a simple example. I tried many kinds of exercise. I went to good stretching specialists and, you know, yoga for arthritis and this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, yoga for people with pain management conditions and who knows what. And you know what? It did not work for me. And at one point I was like, you know, skip this. This is really great, but these people are really trained and this is really good, but I hurt worse when I do these things. And I found other things. And it's funny because oftentimes I don't go every time, but I often go to the Spondylitis Association of America's like support group for the local one for Southern California.
Yep.
And I'll go to the hybrid forum often online when I get a chance on a weekend to go. And I'm like the person who's always being like warm water, aqua therapy.
Yep.
And for me, that really works. I really like it. I, you know, if I could live my whole life from the warm water pool, just set up a little desk and, you know, do that and work from the pool, I'd be great. But, you know, that's not how life goes. But a lot of people that doesn't work for, or they can't get into a pool. I had one woman literally crying, saying, I so want to get in the water, but I can't get my like swimsuit on well in the locker room and it's painful to get off. Like, I hear that. That is not going to work for her. But, you know, some light massage. So again, just like the journaling for me was something that worked for me. And we all find tools in what our pain condition allows. And I felt that at a certain point, it was a compliance to myself. Just like I will take my medication. And if that, you know, peters out for a while, which we've had to, you know, adjust. Many of us have to adjust to a new medication or switch injections or switch to a pill form of something. And then, you know, if you get COVID, you have to go off that because you can't take it while you get COVID. And then you have to go back on. It's like a whole process. And I found that one thing I could do to be compliant to my own needs, to be attending, again, is a good word for it, to my own needs with spondyloarthritis and the aching and stiffness and what have you, was to journal when I could and to do that. But I know that everyone has to find those parts of them that work best for them with their condition, because we can get really lost in the weeds of what all the well-trained clinicians are telling us to do. And again, it's not to badmouth any clinician per se, but you know, some people, I met a woman who did a lot of forest bathing. She took a lot of walks in nature with big trees, and that really made her feel good. They were slow walks. She was a little achy sometimes, and she took her walking sticks and did that. And that spoke to her heart and helped her feel healthier. And if that's what works for you, great. And so I feel like mindful journaling and expressive writing is a wonderful tool. And if it's something that even sparks an interest for you, you know, look it up, reach out to me, or I'll give you some other resources, you know, give you some other resources. But again, my biggest thing for people is find a tool, like you were saying, Jill, that kind of helps you like to reconnect to you outside of all the appointments and the doodads or the TENS units or the capsaicin cream or all of the stuff that we have to like think of with this, you know, that like is separate from the medication that goes in the fridge and how do you travel with it and the this and that. You know, there's a lot of like, and the Sharps container that you got to get. Okay.
Can we rewrite Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire from an AS standpoint? Like right. Your list as you rattle these off, I'm like, all I can
it's
think
a production.
Of is, I mean, the lyrics to that. But it's true. And everything you've listed, I think most of us have been through. It's like when you talk about journaling, especially on a daily or regular basis, I think of it almost as like a ship's log, right? The captain's log.
Right. Right.
Of this is the story of the journey. And at one time I went back and read some of my journals as far back as like when I was 18 years old. And this was about 3 years ago. And I saw what I found, and I don't know if anybody does this, but what I found was consistent things in my life that were upsetting me that didn't serve me and consistent things that did serve me. And I was like, now I have a blueprint.
Right. And that's what the reflective write part is for.
Yeah.
That's why it's helpful to take just a couple minutes and write, not a long thing. I don't want people to get into judging it or right. whatever, but just like, when you read over what I wrote, I notice blank, or it'll help you make some connections with those synapses and what have you. Just a little quicker is not necessarily the word, but easier, and maybe help you have some insight into what's going on while all of the, you know, accoutrements of the pain and all the attending to the production of it all are happening.
Yeah. And as you talk about it, I think it's, you've hit on something that's so important, which is this almost getting to know yourself a little better and not judging. And you've mentioned loving kindness meditations a number of times, right? And that, like, the Buddhist approach is it is like whatever comes is, and we don't judge it, right? Or like from a Stoic approach is like, we just have to sit with things sometimes and not make the judgments. Yeah, this is super cool. Okay, so I don't want to get off the, I can get in the weeds as usual.
Well, just FYI on that, like, I'm not saying I'm joyful about it, but no. I am saying, well, while it's going on, how can I realistically and kindly be with myself in the process so that I can, you know, do the best thing, the next best thing for myself and the world going forward in a good way? And also, I will say, it's helped me. And I know that sounds like a big stretch, but I don't think that I would be who I am without this condition. And I think that that much of my dedication to journaling has come out of having this condition. Now, would I have wished for it? No. But while I've got it, I'm going to try and make the best of it for myself. Again, I'm not saying anybody else has to do that, but that's where I go with this, because that's what I have to do for me to move forward in the most positive way possible for me. Yeah. And it helps me to help others too.
100%.
It helps me to be able to teach others and be with others while they have this going on for them.
So let's wrap up kind of on this note. So you do a number of workshops online and in person. If someone is interested, I think a lot of times, right, the first step is the hardest to take, or walking into the room the first time. What do those workshops look like? And certainly I think people can find out about them on your website. So tell us a little bit about how it works and what happens once you're in the room with a pen and paper in your hand.
So I usually start with a guided meditation, a short one, and some sort of centering activity to bring people in from their day. And then I do a more mind dump type, just come in from where you are, get down the first things, and then write. And then there's a deeper one. Perhaps it's like and I tell everyone, you don't have to share, but you can if you want. And also, if we're online, if it's a workshop on free conference call or on Zoom or something, you know, people call in from all over the world sometimes. They don't have to share if they don't want to. Perhaps I ask them a question like, write a letter to your pain. Dear pain, you know, tell me what you want me to know right now. You know, what do you want me to know? You know, I've had people write things back like, I want you to know that you're more courageous and brave dealing with this than you ever thought you were, or things like that. They'll write for a set amount of time, and then I'll have them close their eyes, take a deep breath, center themselves, read what they wrote, and then write their short reflection. We might, depending on people's conditions, we might get up and stretch a tiny bit, or a little bit rather, and then go back and do another few prompts like that, and take some time in between. There's, you know, a little bit of, if they need to move around, there's some freedom of that. I know this is not sitting still for any length of time. It's really hard when you have, like, you know, for example, spondyloarthritis, and, you know, you've got ants in your pants, not because of short attention span theater, but because your body hurts and, you know, all of that. And then we come back and we do a few more. I ask people if they want to share. And I always say, you can if you want. And I always make sure to everyone knows that anything shared in the room is to be kept in the room confidentially. And I ask people to, you know, not record others if it's online, etc. And sometimes people do share. And the reason I ask people if they want to share either their writing or their reflection, it's really because we gain things from other people's insights sometimes, and or we can feel like we can empathize and we can hear like, wow, other people are also really struggling with this. I think that helps us sort of borrow their courage or feel heard and listened to and validated. And I think that so much of this process of journaling is a validating process for yourself to yourself. And when the workshop is ready to wrap up, I have people kind of just tell me one or two insights they had for themselves, and they don't have to read it. They don't have to feel vulnerable reading everything or reading from what they wrote, but is there some takeaway that they have for themselves? Or is it even just like, what do they like the most? And I ask them to honor their time for themselves. And then I usually give them a few things they could take away, you know, a couple prompts to take away. And if it's in person, I have a list of, you know, resources. There are some organizations that have more stuff. There's one called the IAJW, I think it is, the International Association of Journal Writers.org. Just like a North American based organization, but there's members from all over. There's also a lot of free resources for that from them and meetings online. There's many people who've written books, you know, with resources on this. They can reach out to me on my website or on social, on LinkedIn, Amy Muscoplat, or Instagram, or you know, just through the contact page on my site to find out more resources. And or they can get a book with journal prompts and then just do only the ones that really kind of speak to them. Just because somebody gives you, it's the same as with the exercise, just because somebody gives you a journal prompt doesn't mean it will speak to you. So find what works for you and help yourself to validate your own inner feelings with what you put on, you know, by help yourself to validate yourself with the words you're putting on the page.
I love that. That may be a good place to land. So you're working on your book, Choosing Joy When It Is Not Your Default, which I love the title.
Thank you.
Do you have a date, a release date yet?
My target date is the end of 2024, but hopefully sooner.
Well, hopefully we can come back and interview you next year on that one.
I'll say amen. Like, that's a prayer. It's going to help me to get it done. Very good.
I'm setting the intention to manifest it for you.
Very good. Very good. I'll put it on my vision board.
Exactly. I did my 2024 through 2034 vision board last Saturday.
Very good.
A friend of mine. But thank you for joining us. This has been wonderful. And like, thank you for sharing like so much of your journey with the world. It blows me away. I think it's great. I'm so grateful you took the time to DM me.
Thank you, Jill. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Amazing.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie.
Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.